Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Our primary focus today is how President Trump has fulfilled one of his central campaign promises to the American people in record time, ending the massive illegal invasion and securing our nation's southern and northern borders.
Today marks President Trump's first 100 days back in the White House. His approval rating is the lowest of any president at this stage in at least 70 years. On the eve of his 100th day, Trump signed a new executive order targeting sanctuary cities. Immigrant rights and labor groups are mobilizing for major protests Thursday to mark May Day. We'll speak to organizers in Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York. And then, as Palestinian officials accuse Israel of using aid as a weapon of war in Gaza, we'll speak with the Palestinian-American writer Sara Aziza, author of the new book, The Hollow Half, a memoir of bodies and borders.
I began the book in 2020, but I was finishing the second half of it in 2023. So it really became a challenge to hold both all that there is to love and defend about Palestine and specifically Gaza, where my family comes from, as well as trying to witness the horror and speak out against it and sort of drive the book towards both a defense of everything that we have left to gain and a negotiation with the despair that's always pressing in and always trying to challenge the hope and resilience that Palestinians have.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli airstrikes across the Gaza Strip have killed at least 13 Palestinians today, one day after Israeli attacks killed 48 others, including five children killed on a Gaza City street in an Israeli drone strike. Separately, four Palestinians were killed, three of them children, when Israel bombed a tent camp for displaced people near Khan Yunis. It's the latest attack by Israel on an area its military had designated as a so-called safe zone. Israel's unrelenting assault continued as Palestinian officials say Israel's total siege of Gaza has led to over 65,000 cases of acute malnutrition in children. This is Khan Yunis resident Basma Sheikh Khalil.
We call on the International Court of Justice to help in opening the crossings because the people are starving. This is a starvation policy. There is no flour and no food. There is nothing coming into the Gaza Strip. The people, both young and old, are sick. They can't find food or water to drink.
The International Court of Justice is holding a second day of hearings into Israel's obligations to provide humanitarian aid into Gaza. Earlier today, South Africa's representative told a panel of judges, quote, under the world's watchful eye, Palestinians are being subjected to atrocity, crimes, persecution, apartheid, and genocide, unquote. Throughout the week, representatives of 38 countries are set to address the court. Only two of those nations, the U.S. and Hungary, will testify in support of Israel's siege of Gaza. On Monday, Israel's foreign minister, Gideon Sa'ar, rejected the proceedings as part of a systematic persecution of Israel.
Israel decided not to take part in this circus. The U.N. has become a rotten, anti-Israel and anti-Semitic body.
Meanwhile, Amnesty International has accused Israel of carrying out a live-stream genocide in Gaza with the support of both major political parties in the United States. That's part of an assessment in Amnesty's annual State of the World's Human Rights Report, which is out today. In it, Amnesty's Secretary General Agnes Callamard writes, quote, 2024 will be remembered for how Israel's military occupation grew ever more brazen and deadly, for the way the USA, Germany, and a handful of other European states supported Israel, the way the USA under the Biden administration repeatedly vetoed UN Security Council resolutions calling for a ceasefire and states' continued arms transfers to Israel, unquote. The UN's warning ongoing U.S. attacks on Yemen pose a deadly risk to civilians after a U.S. strike on a migrant detention center in the north of the country killed at least 68 people Monday and injured dozens more. Most or all the victims are believed to be migrants from African nations. This is Dawood Jibril from Ethiopia, a survivor of the attack.
We were sleeping in the prison when the aircraft struck. It bombed us, and then everyone was injured. Some were hit by debris, others had their legs amputated, and some were injured in their eyes and lost their sight. Many people died.
The U.S. has killed over 250 people in Yemen since escalating its attacks against Houthi forces in mid-March. A number of advocacy groups and progressive Democrats have demanded President Trump stop attacking Yemen and argued the strikes are unconstitutional as they've not been approved by Congress. In Canada, Mark Carney of the Liberal Party narrowly won snap elections and will remain in power as prime minister, defeating conservative leader Pierre Poilievre, who also lost his own seat in parliament. Carney's victory comes amidst heightened tensions with the U.S. over Trump's tariffs and threats to annex Canada. Early Monday, Trump once again threatened to make Canada the 51st state. In his victory speech, Prime Minister Carney maintained the defiant tone that helped him surge in popularity in the weeks preceding the election, telling voters, quote, our old relationship with the United States is over.
America wants our land, our resources, our water, our country. Never. But these are not idle threats. President Trump is trying to break us so that America can own us. That will never, ever happen.
It's still unclear if liberals will secure enough votes to form a majority government, though they're projected to fall just shy of the 172 seats required. Meanwhile, the head of Canada's new Democratic Party, Jagmeet Singh, announced he's stepping down as party leader after the NDP was projected to lose over two-thirds of its seats, including his own. President Trump signed three more executive orders further cracking down on the rights of immigrants and asylum seekers. One order seeks to compile a list of so-called sanctuary cities that refuse to cooperate with Trump's mass deportation policies. A second order further militarizes local police departments while providing legal resources to officers accused of abuses. It also seeks to undo federal consent decrees for departments that have committed civil rights abuses and seeks to punish local officials who, quote, unlawfully prohibit law enforcement officers from carrying out duties, unquote. A third executive order requires professional truck drivers to be proficient in English. On Monday, staffers placed signs on the White House lawn showing mugshots of immigrants, linking them to crimes with the word arrested written in all caps. This comes as House Republicans have proposed a bill that would charge people arriving at a U.S. port of entry $1,000 in order to file an asylum claim and a $3,500 fee for those sponsoring children. The right to seek asylum is a fundamental human right enshrined in international law, and the U.S. has never before charged petitioners. A U.S. lawyer representing 10 Venezuelan men deported without due process to El Salvador by the Trump administration says she was denied access to her clients at the notorious CICAT prison. Carrie Kennedy said from San Salvador on Monday, she'd also hoped to document human rights abuses inside the prison.
The president of the United States has done so following the same script that President Bukele has used against his own people, the label of terrorists, the gang members, without any shred of evidence and any semblance of due process.
Carrie Kennedy is a sister of Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and the daughter of the assassinated former attorney general and presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy. The Trump administration's dismissed some 400 researchers involved in putting together the National Climate Assessment. The flagship governmental report is designed to help local and federal authorities respond to the evolving climate crisis and is published every few years by congressional mandate. The sixth edition of the assessment was scheduled to be released in 2028, though its publication is now in question. In related news, federal cuts ordered by Elon Musk's Doge operation have canceled AmeriCorps' National Civilian Community Corps, which places over 2,000 young people in community nonprofits or in disaster recovery roles. Over two-thirds of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division staff are expected to leave their jobs, accepting a resignation offer as the Trump administration moves to drastically reshape the agency. The new director of the DOJ's Civil Rights Division, Harmeet K. Dhillon, has ordered workers to turn their attention to combating anti-Semitism, anti-Christian bias, and so-called woke ideology. As part of the division's overhaul, senior positions overseeing the Justice Department's work on voting rights have been removed, and attorneys have been directed to dismiss all active cases. As President Trump marks 100 days back in office, new polls show his approval rating around 40%, the lowest rating for the first 100 days of any president in 80 years. A Washington Post-ABC News poll found even fewer people trust the Democratic Party, with nearly 7 in 10 saying it's out of touch, while 6 in 10 say Trump is out of touch. As the so-called Department of Government Efficiency also marks 100 days of gutting the federal government, a new Senate report finds Elon Musk and his businesses could avoid over $2 billion in potential legal liability thanks to cuts Musk enacted as head of DOGE. When Trump was inaugurated, Musk was facing up to 65 actions from 11 federal agencies targeting SpaceX, Tesla, Neuralink, the Boeing Company, and XAI. That's the Boring Company. Senate Democrats now say Musk has largely averted those actions thanks to DOGE helping him, quote, evade oversight, derail investigations, and make litigation disappear whenever he so chooses on his terms and at his command, unquote. President Trump's pardoned Paul Wolchek, a Florida healthcare executive convicted of tax evasion for stealing nearly $11 million in payroll taxes from the paychecks of doctors and nurses. Just 12 days ago, a jury found him guilty after prosecutors showed he used the money to finance a lavish lifestyle that included luxury goods and a $2 million yacht. He is the son of Betsy Faygo, a healthcare entrepreneur and Republican Party donor. Meanwhile, President Trump has pardoned a Republican former Las Vegas City Councilwoman and state lawmaker from Nevada who was convicted in October of embezzling funds. Michelle Fiore was found guilty of 6 counts of federal wire fraud and 1 count of conspiracy for raising over $70,000 for the statue of a slain Las Vegas police officer and instead using the money to pay for rent, plastic surgery, and her daughter's wedding. Democratic leaders led a 12-hour sit-in protest on the Capitol steps as lawmakers returned to Washington, D.C. to take up a budget for the 2026 fiscal year. The New York Times reports the White House is proposing a budget that would cut billions of dollars from programs that support child care, health research, education, housing assistance, community development, and the elderly. Meanwhile, 3 civil rights leaders were arrested Monday as they held prayers inside the Capitol Rotunda to protest against the Republican-led budget bill. Among the arrested was Reverend William J. Barber, president of Repairers of the Breach and co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign.
How many of you believe, even more than you did when you came here, that this budget is a moral issue? And that this current budget is, say this with me if you believe it, it is morally indefensible. It's constitutionally inconsistent. And it's economically insane.
Electricity has been restored to most of Spain and Portugal after a massive power failure unexpectedly struck the Iberian Peninsula Monday. The widespread blackout stranded rail and airline passengers, shuttered schools, businesses and offices, and forced hospitals to operate on emergency generators. Spanish and Portuguese authorities say they're still determining the cause of one of the biggest power outages ever seen in Europe. And the Vatican says it'll begin the process of selecting a new pope May 7th. Some 135 cardinals, all of them men under the age of 80, will begin a closed-door meeting on that date to vote for the new leader of the 1.4 billion-member Catholic Church. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. As President Trump marks 100 days back in the White House, immigrant rights and labor groups are mobilizing for major May Day protests on Thursday. We'll go to Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York. Stay with us.
Today I feel weak, but tomorrow I'll feel a queen. I was raised by the street. This hurt I've suffered, it just begins again in a baby girl or a full-grown man. Tomorrow will come like the turning of the sun over tall buildings. It lives in my heart, but buried in the past. Here comes the navigator. She knows you're fading fast.
The Navigator by Alinda Segarra of Hooray for the Riffraff in our Democracy Now! Studio back in 2017. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Today marks 100 days since President Trump returned to the White House. Multiple polls show his approval rating after 100 days is lower than any president in 80 years. Ahead of his 100th day, Trump signed three new executive orders, including one targeting sanctuary cities. The order instructs Attorney General Pam Bondi to pursue, quote, all necessary legal remedies and enforcement measures, unquote, against state and local jurisdictions who refuse to assist with Trump's mass deportation plans. A second order further militarizes local police departments and seeks to punish local officials who, quote, unlawfully prohibit law enforcement officers from carrying out duties, unquote. It also provides legal resources to officers accused of abuses. A third executive order requires professional truck drivers to be proficient in English. This comes as outrage grows over Trump's sweeping anti-immigrant crackdown. On Friday, the Trump administration deported to Honduras three U.S. citizen children, including a four-year-old boy who's actively receiving treatment for a rare form of stage four cancer. The boy was removed with a seven-year-old sister, who's also a U.S. citizen, and their mother. In a separate case, the U.S. removed a two-year-old U.S. citizen, along with her mother. The Trump administration also continues to refuse court orders to bring home Kilmar Abrego Garcia, a Maryland father who was mistakenly flown to El Salvador by the Department of Justice's own admission on March 15th. Over the weekend, ICE conducted a number of high-profile immigration raids in Florida. ICE worked with local officials to detain nearly 800 people. Meanwhile, in Colorado Springs, ICE agents raided a nightclub and made over 100 arrests. Immigrant rights groups across the country are planning major May Day protests for Thursday. We begin today's show with two guests helping to plan the May Day protests. Here in New York, Nisha Tabassum, the lead organizer for worker issues at Make the Road New York, an immigrant rights and advocacy group. And in Chicago, we're joined by Jorge Mujica, the strategic organizer for Arise Chicago, which advocates for immigrant workers' rights, one of the lead organizers of the May Day protests in Chicago. Jorge, before we talk about those major protests on Thursday, can you go to these executive orders and respond to what President Trump did very significantly on this eve of the 100th day he's back in office? And interestingly, as his polls across the board are tanking, including how he's dealing with immigrants.
Good morning, Amy. Thank you for having us here. These are smoke screens. President Trump has signed 157, I think, executive orders related to immigration. It is not possible to even comply, start complying with the legal ones. Forget about challenging the illegal ones. It's just a continuous circus. He will be issuing orders and more orders, even if they don't make any kind of sense. The federal government cannot mandate a local police department to do anything or to not do anything. The city of Chicago is a municipality completely free to decide what exactly their police does. So I don't think we have to pay a whole lot more attention to this kind of crazy executive orders.
And Jorge, could you talk about the protests that are planned not only for May Day, but for the following days? Chicago, back in 2006, you were part of the organizers of the first immigrant rights protest. And it was really Chicago that set the whole nation off on a series of protests that stunned the country back then.
That's right. And I think we took the lead again. Back in January, we started meeting. Because there were several calls by several people, mostly social media personalities, saying that we should have a day without immigrants here and there. And we decided that we should concentrate in one particular day, one particular date, to really be able to get everybody together. The Trump administration miscalculated completely. Instead of attacking only one community, as they did in 2006, they are attacking everybody at the same time. And that enabled us to gather a really broad coalition with labor unions, with federal workers, with students, with teachers at universities, and every other community, and put together this event on May Day. May Day was born in Chicago. And we recovered May Day for history because it had been completely forgotten. Everybody thought it was a foreign celebration. But it's May Day, Chicago. This is the origin of May Day. So we decided to march on this day and to have several actions on the following days. On Friday, May 2nd, students are going to walk out their colleges and universities and high schools, and we are promoting a no margaritas and no guacamole weekend. You know, we cannot have a society celebrating a Cinco de Mayo without Mexicans. If they want their Cinco de Mayo, they have to want Mexicans in this town and this city. So we are putting together this series of events over the weekend, starting on May Day, Thursday.
And Nisha Tabassum, could you talk about what is being planned for New York City?
Yeah, thank you so much, Jorge. You know, we're living in a moment where we're seeing unprecedented attacks on unions and workers in this country. We're seeing corporate takeovers of our federal government. We're seeing companies and billionaires exploiting workers for their own gain. And so right now we are joining, Make the Road is joining over 50 unions and advocacy groups and immigrant rights groups to come together on May 1st at 5 p.m. at Foley Square. To demand that we need to stand back and fight. We need to fight this corporate takeover. We are the many. They are the few. It's time to stand back and fight. So really encouraging everyone to come join us, come march with us. As you've already stated, you know, Labor May Day is rooted in resistance, and this is a moment that we all need to come together to fight against these federal cuts, to fight against the attacks on all different kinds of workers, especially immigrant workers.
And Jorge, I wanted to go back to you for a second. You've also talked about Arise Chicago is also targeting certain corporations for consumer boycotts. Could you talk about that as well?
That's correct. We, the Consejo de Resistencia y Defensa del Inmigrante, that's the right denomination. We are targeting three major stores. We are targeting Walmart, we are targeting Target and McDonald's, mostly because of their complying with Donald Trump orders to do away with minority hiring and, you know, affirmative actions. And also two particular brands, very popular in the Mexican community and the Latino community, and those are Goya products and Miller Beer, because they are sponsors of the Republican Party, because they donated money to Donald Trump. So we decided to go ahead and stop buying these products, and we will be promoting that boycott over the May Day weekend, too.
We're also joined by Georgia Flowers Lee, National Education Association Vice President for United Teachers Los Angeles, has been an educator for over 20 years. As we mark this 100th day of President Trump's term, he has signed I don't know how many executive orders, both around immigration, most recently on the eve of this day yesterday, and also around DEI, around diversity, equity and inclusion. If you can talk about why you're going to be out in the streets on Thursday and what your gravest concerns are right now. Interestingly, overall, with these polls tanking, you may be well representing the majority of people in this country, Georgia.
Good morning, Amy. Thank you for having me. Yeah, we're going to be out in the streets on May Day, along with a broad coalition of other labor unions, of advocacy groups, of immigrant rights groups, because the attacks that are coming are targeting our children, targeting our immigrant families. It seems as if it's a move to destroy the foundation on which our democracy is built. All the cuts that are coming out of the Department of Education, what that is going to do to our students, particularly our students who are most marginalized, or students with exceptional needs, or students who begin life with challenges. What happens to those students? And we are keeping our eye on the move to privatize public education, which we all acknowledge is the foundation of democracy. It's what gives us an opportunity. Without public education, kids who start off behind the ball are simply not going to have a chance. So we feel it is our absolute moral obligation to stand up to fight for students and for our families, particularly our immigrant families and or students who are terrified. We had just a couple of weeks ago, the Department of Homeland Security tried to invade two of our elementary schools and take students out. Luckily, the staff at those schools, were able to defend and prevent it from happening. But imagine how terrifying that is for our students and for the families who entrust their students, who entrust their children to our care. So we see this as a moral imperative for us to stand up, to stand in coalition with others, and to push back against what is happening. And so we'll be out there on May Day, but we will also be out there on May 17th. We are mobilizing with other teachers' unions across the metropolitan LA area to show up. And we are showing up at SpaceX, and we are letting the folks who are controlling the levers of power know that we are taking our power back. We are not ceding anything, and we think it is absolutely our moral obligation to do so.
And Georgia Flowers Lee, could you talk about the response of the public school districts in California to the recent announcement, the Department of Education, that all school districts have to certify that they're not involved with any kind of what the government calls discriminatory diversity, equity and inclusion programs, or they'll face cutoffs of Title I money?
Across the board, we are saying no. The California Department of Education has said no, or state affiliate, the California Teachers Association, has said no. Diversity is our strength. We want inclusion. Inclusion means we all get an opportunity. We all get to be involved. We all get to participate. And equity simply means that, you know, that we are trying to level the playing field.